Let us briefly review what we have so far said about the structure of the ear. What we hear as sounds are actually vibrations. Waves in the air are collected by the auricle and directed into the ear canal. After passing through the ear canal, they hit the eardrum and set it vibrating. The eardrum relays this vibration to the hammer, anvil, and stirrup to be intensified and regulated. Yet, these are all nothing but mere vibrations taking place in the outer and middle ear. Despite the continuous transmission of vibrations, we are still only talking about mechanical energy. In other words, no sound has been produced yet. The transformation of mechanical energy into sound happens in the inner ear. The inner ear is divided into two parts: the cochlea, which contains the hearing nerves, and the labyrinth, which houses the sense of balance. The cochlea is a spiral-shaped, fluid-filled organ that resembles a snail shell. The stapes, which is the last component of the middle ear, is connected to a membrane on the entrance to the inner ear. This connection maintains the transfer of the mechanical vibrations in the middle ear to the fluid filling of the inner ear. This transfer, however, causes a great loss in the vibrations and weakens them considerably. This loss is due to the resistance by the fluid to the vibrations coming through the air. It is estimated that this effect, known as acoustic resistance, cuts down sound by approximately 30 decibels. If no precaution were taken against acoustic resistance, then we would hear sounds 30 decibels lower than their actual strengths. That would mean we would not be able to hear some sounds at all. The sounds we do hear, on the other hand, would be much lower than their actual intensities. However, a comprehensive precaution is taken against acoustic resistance. All the sound amplifying factors in the outer and middle ear contribute to this precaution. The auricle, the eardrum, and the small bones in the middle ear amplify the sound waves before they meet acoustic resistance. Surprisingly, it is estimated that this amplification is also of around 30 decibels, the same amount as the loss caused by the acoustic resistance. It is evident that there is a very well-computed balance here. The vibrations reaching the fluid in the inner ear through this delicate balance create waves in this fluid. The inner walls of the cochlea are lined with small hair-like structures called stereocilia, which are affected by the waves in the surrounding fluid. These hair-like structures undergo slight changes depending on the vibrations in the fluid. A strong sound makes more of these cells bend in a stronger fashion. Every individual sound frequency in the external world generates different interactions in these hair-like structures. What do the movements of these hair-like structures represent? What is the relationship between the movement of the stereocilia in the cochlea and listening to a classical music concert, recognizing the voice of a friend, hearing the noise of a car, or differentiating among millions of other sounds? The answer is interesting and restates the incredible design in the ear. These hair-like structures are actually separate mechanisms located on about 20,000 individual hair cells surrounding the inner wall of the cochlea. Like the domino effect, the stereocilia push one another when they perceive a vibration. This movement opens the lids of the hair cells underneath the hair-like structures, through which ions enter. When stereocilia lean to the opposite side, the lids of the hair cells close. This constant movement alters the chemical balance of the cells, causing them to generate electrical impulses. These electrical impulses are transmitted via nerves to the brain, where they are interpreted and converted into sound sensations. How the brain, which is merely a piece of flesh, makes this interpretation and turns the incoming electrical impulses into a human voice, a thunderclap, or a piece of music remains a mystery. In brief, our listening to the sound of a piano involves different movements of the hair-like structures in the cochlea according to the different notes, the formation of different ion equilibriums in the hair cells connected to the hair-like structures with each of these different movements, and the productions of impulses by these chemical processes. The cells perform these awe-inspiring operations every second for a lifetime without ever getting exhausted, being confused or deformed. Science still has to puzzle out even the technical details of this system. While generating the electrical signals, the cells in the inner ear also manage to reflect the frequency, strength, and rhythms of the incoming sound waves. This is such a complex process that so far science has not yet established whether frequency differentiation is carried out in the inner ear or the brain. Meanwhile, the movements of the stereocilia in the inner ear also deserve a mention. We just mentioned that the stereocilia swing in a domino effect fashion. However, the reality is that the movement of this hair-like structure is often very limited. Research has revealed that a movement of the radius of an atom in the hair-like structure is enough to initiate a reaction. Researchers clarify the sensitivity of the hair-like structure with an interesting example. If we imagine the hair-like structure to be the size of the Eiffel Tower, the reaction in the hair cell connected to it would start even when the top of the Eiffel Tower was rocked by just 3 centimeters. The answer to the question how frequently the stereocilia sway is also very interesting. The frequency changes depending on the frequency of the sound. The number of swaying movements of the stereocilia reaches unbelievable levels as the frequency increases. For instance, a sound of a frequency of 20,000 causes the stereocilia to sway 20,000 times a second. The delicate calculations in human beings' hearing range are also worthy of attention. Humans can detect frequencies of from 20 to 20,000 waves a second. Thanks to this limitation, called the hearing threshold, we cannot hear very uncomfortable sounds. Auditory sensitivity thresholds differ in animals according to their needs. Whales and bats can hear frequencies as high as 200,000 waves a second. It is not just the stereocilia and hair cells that make up the inner ear. There are numerous other cells responsible for providing energy and support for these structures. They are all specialized in structure and carry out their own particular tasks. The same delicate balance holds true also for the fluid balance in the inner ear. The fluid which surrounds the stereocilia and moves the hair cells is called the endolymph. This fluid is surrounded by another fluid called the perilymph, and these two fluids are separated by a membrane-like structure. The compositions of these fluids play a very important role in the sense of hearing. The inner ear also contains a vital mechanism responsible for balance. Before proceeding with the structure of the balance center, it will be useful to examine the concept of balance. Balance is an amazing concept, maintained by the most complex systems in the human body. Balance in man is nothing like the balance of a table or a chair, because the human body is constantly in motion. the center of gravity of the body is always being recalculated. Orders are given to the muscles in accordance with these calculations. The inner ear contains an important component of this balance system, which keeps our body under control every second and enables people to make very fine adjustments, as in the case of a rope dancer. The balance center in the inner ear is called the labyrinth. The labyrinth contains three small semicircular bones. The inside of these bones are hollow like tubes. The semicircles are 6.5 millimeters each in diameter. And the diameter of the area inside them, that is, their cross-section, is 0.4 millimeters. The semicircles are connected to each other at very peculiar angles. A study of these angles revealed that each semicircle correlates to X, Y, and Z coordinates, which are the basis of three-dimensional geometry. In all the three semicircles in the labyrinth, there exists a special fluid, as in the case of the cochlea. On the surface, where this fluid is, there are also hair-like structures similar to the cochlea. When we turn our heads from side to side, walk or move, the fluid in these semicircles moves and causes these structures to vibrate. Similar to the cochlear system, this vibration occurring in the hair-like structures alters the ion balance of the hair cells associated with these structures and produces electrical signals. Nerves emanating from the labyrinth transmit the electrical signals produced in the labyrinth in the inner ear to the cerebellum, which is an organ located at the back of the brain. The nerves carrying messages from the labyrinth to the cerebellum consist of 20,000 nerve fibers. The cerebellum interprets the information coming from the labyrinth every moment. To maintain balance, however, there is also a need for different forms of information. That is why the cerebellum constantly receives information from the eyes and the muscles all over the body. The cerebellum analyzes these pieces of information at an incredible speed and computes the location of the body in relation to gravity. Then, based on these calculations, it determines what movement the muscles must make. The result is again communicated to the muscles via the nerves. All these mind-boggling operations take place in less than 1/100th of a second. Meanwhile, oblivious of this miracle, we walk, run, and take the most arduous exercise. However, if we attempted to write down the formulae of all the calculations taking place in our body in one single moment, while we were doing all these things, they would cover thousands of pages. What we have examined so far indicates that our ears, the organs responsible for hearing, have an amazing design. The ear is a flawless organ functioning through dozens of interrelated complex mechanisms working in harmony. Modern science and technology fails even to unravel the details of the working principles of this system, let alone imitate it. Surely, it is unlikely that such a complex design could have emerged by chance, as the theory of evolution claims. Every design indicates the existence of a conscious designer who created it. The outstanding design in the ear proves the existence of God, who flawlessly created this organ, together with his sovereignty over nature. In the face of this fact, what falls to man is simply to be grateful to God, the bestower on him of the sense of hearing. In the 23rd verse of Surat al-Mulk, God addresses people as follows. Say, He it is who brought you into being, and made for you the ears and the eyes and the hearts. Little is it that you give thanks. In return for all the features God has given him, man should turn to God, not merely with words, but with due contemplation and sensitivity of the heart. This is emphasized in the 31st and 32nd verses of Surah Yunus. Say, who gives you sustenance from the heaven and the earth? Or who controls the hearing and the sight? And who brings forth the living from the dead, and brings forth the dead from the living? And who regulates the affairs? Then they will say, God. Say then, will you not then guard against evil? This then is God, your true Lord. And what is there after the truth but error? How are you then turned back? This program is based on the book by Harun Yahya, The Miracle in the Ear.